Welcome to this edition of Techonomics. Nir Eyal designs things. It's just that when he designs things, they become habit-forming for consumers. His book, entitled Hooked, is a deep dive into building physical objects that have emotional resonance. Oh, and they tend to sell really well, too. Host Jason Middleton sits down with Nir to talk about the power of persuasion.
Hi, and welcome back to Techonomics. Theories around marketing float in and out of fashion, like those little things in your eye that float across your vision. Maybe that's just me. Anyway, different approaches to marketing float in and out of enthusiasm among creators, VCs, and just about anyone else in and around Silicon Valley. The one thing that never goes out of style, that everyone consistently needs users. Everyone needs not just to attract them, but to keep them. Nir Eyal can help with that.
I tend to get called in one of two phases, either super early or when it's almost too late. So sometimes VCs or entrepreneurs will call me, and they'll call me the plumber because they want me to figure out why users are leaking.
We pick up my chat with Nir Eyal, the author of Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products, as we discuss a workplace software hub and messaging system. It's called Slack. It's designed to keep teams engaged and vastly reduce the volume of email among employees. Slack, what is the action there? Is the action the appeal of not having so many emails to answer?
The action is checking the feed. So the key action with Slack is, so the internal trigger, the feeling that we're satiating, is FOMO, right? This fear of missing out of what's going on at work that I might be missing out on. So to satiate that feeling, all I have to do, the action phase in that case, is to open the app, check the feed. Scrolling through the feed gives me this variable reward, right? Seeing what conversations I've missed, checking in on the string of conversations on Slack, that's the variability. What did people write? What's going on? What am I missing? Those are all variable rewards. Mm-hmm. And then the investment, of course, is commenting, right? When I leave something on Slack, when I leave a message on that string, I'm investing in the service. There's no immediate gratification, right? Nothing happens right away, but I've invested in the platform and I'm loading the next trigger. I'm repeating the cycle because I'm likely to get a reply.
Okay.
And that reply comes coupled with this external trigger, some kind of notification that puts me through the hook once again.
Okay. If we don't incorporate the hook model early on, and maybe even before, like you said, before we begin coding, are there other inflection points where we could apply the hook model?
Yes. Great question. So I tend to get called in one of two phases, either super early or when it's almost too late. So sometimes VCs or entrepreneurs will call me, and they'll call me the plumber, because they want me to figure out why users are leaking. You know, this typically happens when some VC has poured a lot of money into a company, that company has figured out some amazing viral hack, and user growth was amazing. Everybody's impressed with how quickly they grew. And then typically, you know, the next day after the VC capital hits the bank, people start leaving, right? It's a leaky bucket business, and they don't know why. So the hook model and my book can be a diagnostic tool to figure out, hey, why aren't people sticking around? What's going on? Are we missing a good external trigger? Did we identify the wrong internal trigger? Is the action too difficult? Is the reward not rewarding? Are we not asking people to invest? So you can diagnose for yourself, hey, if my product is not habit forming, why? What's going on? What's missing? What's broken in the hook that I can then go back and hopefully fix?
So you and your collaborator, Ryan Hoover, have written Hooked. You have shared your secret sauce. You're in high demand. What do you have coming up next?
You know, what's occupying my brain these days is the conversation I think is turning the other way. I think when I came to Silicon Valley, I came to Silicon Valley about 11 years ago, back in 2006. Mm. And I came here, there was a different vibe. I have to say, the vibe was that, you know, there was a bunch of people here who really did think that they could change the world. They could make it better. They could be a part of something big. And now I think that there's this climate of cynicism, in a way, not just skepticism, but cynicism for technology, that technology is out to get us, and that there's a few books that recently came out that basically the punchline is that technology is melting our brains and trying to addict us. And I just think that's hogwash.
Really?
Yes, that, you know, it's the knee-jerk reaction that, oh my God, this technology. And look, I wrote the book Hooked, right? I teach these companies how to make habit-forming products.
Right.
But the idea that they hopelessly addict us and that we can't control ourselves, that's just not true. That in fact, that it's by thinking that we're powerless that we become so. That when we give so much power to these companies to think, oh my God, I, you know, they absolutely addict me, we have studies that show us that people who believe that they are powerless to a drug, to alcohol, to food, those are the ones that relapse. Those are the ones who actually overindulge.
Right.
That this is that by and large, these technologies are great. They really do help people. And so I think the pendulum is swinging a little bit to the other direction. So I want to help kind of guide that conversation. Not that I don't think that we should moderate our use. I mean, I'm just as much of an advocate. If you look on my blog, half of it is about how to build healthy habits. The other half of my article is about how to break unhealthy habits. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I absolutely do think that we can use the same exact model to put technology in its place, to make sure technology doesn't control us. But the way we start that is by understanding how this technology works so that we can get the best out of it, but also put away the stuff that's not serving us.
Yeah, it is a dual purpose blog. I was perusing it. I couldn't put it down last night. Thanks.
Thank you.
You mentioned guiding the conversation there and your forward thinking. Is artificial intelligence and machine learning, is that fitting into your rubric as you build it?
Well, I think that anything that makes the intended behavior easier to do makes the product more potentially habit-forming.
Okay.
And I think when it comes to artificial intelligence, I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see more technology assisting us with our decision-making. And by and large, it's going to be a good thing. There's always pitfalls. Look, Sophocles, the Greek philosopher, said 2,500 years ago that nothing vast enters the life of mortals without a curse. So, of course, there are bad sides to technology. There has always been a bad side to technology. Mm-hmm. Kevin Kelly, the founder of Wired Magazine, said that all of our problems are both come and are solved by technology. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very much the case. And I think we're starting to see that reckoning now, right? We've adopted all these personal technologies. They're so great. They enhance our lives. And now we're saying to ourselves, wait a minute, but there's some downsides. How do we deal with those downsides?
So technology is not moral or amoral. It just is how we apply it.
And how it's built, right? I think that in my book, there's a whole chapter called The Morality of Manipulation, which is all about how to use this stuff for good. How can we help people build healthy habits? I mean, look, the vast majority of the companies that call me and work with me and read this book, these aren't companies that are struggling with people being addicted to their products. These are companies that are struggling with the fact that nobody cares about their product, right?
Right.
I see so many entrepreneurs who want to use these tactics, who want to use consumer psychology for good, to help people save money, eat better, exercise more, connect with their loved ones who are far away, be more productive at work. That's the real promise of these tactics. It's not that a few companies make products, you know, like Facebook and Twitter that suck us in. The real problem is that most technology out there just sucks, right? That, you know, most technology, if you think about, you know, the average website, the average local business, the average government service, oh my God, the technology is horrible.
Right.
And so that's where I want this stuff to be applied, is to make technology easier to use by using these tactics that come from consumer psychology.
So there's a behavioral design summit coming up. Are you going to be giving the Hooked speech there?
I will be. So this is the fourth one.
Fourth one?
Yes. So this is the fourth annual Habit Summit. It's happening at Mission Bay on April 4th and 5th. It's the largest gathering of behavioral designers in the world. And we talk about how to build these healthy habits. So I'm giving a new talk this year about ethics, about how do we design ethically? How do we make sure that we can answer this question of what won't we do when it comes to persuading people? Because the fact is, it's no longer an open question on whether we can change people's behavior. I mean, the fact that we carry around these devices with us every day, this gives designers and entrepreneurs more power to affect more people's behavior than ever before. So I think what we need to think about is how do we use this morally and responsibly?
Is that where maybe the cynicism comes from? Does Silicon Valley feel like it built a problem and now it doesn't know how to fix it? Is that the cynicism?
Well, I think that the solution is the technology. That a big part of the solution is the next generation of technology that fixes the last generation's faults. But that's not necessarily a problem, one that's natural, that always happens with every new technology. I mean, the agricultural revolution gave us obesity. The industrial revolution gave us global warming and pollution. The information revolution gives us a short attention span that we need to control how we use our attention. But the solution to that is more technology, is tools that help put technology in its place. And that is an opportunity. So I'm the only one who's talking about ethics on that day, but everybody else is going to talk about what a lot of the entrepreneurs in the room are going to care about, how to increase engagement, how to build habits, how to make products more engaging so that they can ultimately help their customers and users.
Well, we went over, and I'm really glad we did. Thank you so much for sticking around here. It's very nice to meet you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Nir Eyal, a Stanford MBA and lecturer, blogger, and thought leader in marketing. He's also the author of Hooked: How to Build Habit-Forming Products. Now, before you throw Nir under the digital bus because his Hooked method is so influential, he also lights a candle on his blog with a way to help us not be so distracted by our digital. That method is called Unhooked. You see what he did there? We have links to his book, his blog, and his speaking engagements at KGORadio.com/Techonomics. You can also check us out for links and weekly musical playlists at Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.